All right, we're going to begin here on the top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph. The Gemara begins with Ibaitema. Ibaitema seems to be an alternative answer to the previous question that we had. If you look at the previous Gemara, the question that the Gemara was faced with is that we have two Braitot. We have a Braita that talks about a Mafkirat Karmol. And in that Braita of Mafkirat Karmol, we said if the guy wakes up the next morning and takes his property back, that is deemed to be Hafkir and he's Patur Min HaMaser. Yet, we had a previous Braita, the Braita of Mafkirat Sadeu. And in the case of Mafkirat Sadeyu, we had one part of the Braita that seemed like the Chachamim, one part that seemed like Rabbi Yossi, and we had two answers to that problem. Ula said that entire Braita is like the Rabbonon, and that the real din is a din that, in terms of Hafkir, it happens immediately. The way you have to wait 3 days is Mipnei HaRamayin. And then why, in the case of a duration type of Hafkir, where it's for limited duration, whether it's a day, a week, a month, a year, so on and so forth, the reason there that it doesn't become Hefker until the other party takes possession of it is because of the fact that in that case, he's showing that he's not truly being Mafkirit. He's holding on to it. He's resisting giving it up entirely. And therefore, it's not Hefker until it reaches the other party. So that is the Shita of Ulo with regards to that previous Mafkirit Sadehu. And the way that he dealt with here of Mafkirit Karmo is to say this is the Din Doraita. The Chachamim think Doraita Hefker works and works immediately. The imposition of the Chachamim of the 3 days is Mipnei HaRamayim. So this Mishnah is on the Din Doraita. The Mishnah before was on the Din Dirabanan. So that's the way that Ula would explain it. But the Gemara was then faced with an issue with regards to Reish Lakish's explanation. Reish Lakish said before that the Braita that we brought him up, Kirtse Deo, was really Shitat Rabbi Yossi across the board. Now, if it's Shitat Rabbi Yossi across the board, and there we explained why Shitat Rabbi Yossi went that way, the reason for the 3 days was Shalot Yishkachach Torat Hefker, and the reason by the case of Shavua Shana, the duration laid in Hefker, there was an unusual, lo shchiach. It doesn't happen commonly, and therefore the Chachamim were not gozer, lo tishtakach torat Hefker. So that was explanation of Rabbi Yossi. But then we come to this, Braita, a Mafkirat Karmo. How does Rabbi Yossi fit into this Braita? There's no way to explain Rabbi Yossi in this Braita where you will become, immediately it'll become Hefker and you'll be Patur Min HaMaser. How did that happen over here? So now, that's what the Gemara left off with, Reish Lakish, Amai Patur Min HaSer, Amalacha. So that's the answer. The first answer the Gemara gave was that, Ein Ochanami, the Braita of Mafkirat Karmol cannot fit according to Rabbi Yossi, and that's a Shita Chachamim, that's according to Rabbanan. The previous Braita, Mafkirat Sadehu, that is Shita Rabbi Yossi, and that Braita can be explained according to Rabbi Yossi. That was the first answer we gave. Now we come to a Gemara that says, Ibayetema. There's an alternate answer. The question is, what is this an alternate answer to? So Rashi, you can look in the first line, and Rashi says, Kiplolig Rabbi Yossi Alayu de Rabbanan. The way that Rashi reads it is this is an alternate explanation for the Mishnah to explain the difference in the opinions between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim in the Mishnah. Why Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't work when the guy's Mudar Hana, Mimenu, and they're just the two of them in the desert, and he wants to be Mafkir the food in order that he can utilize it. Chachamim said it worked. Rabbi Yossi says it didn't work. So that's what the Gemara is coming to explain here. According to Rashi, Baitema is an alternate answer to explain that machloket in the Mishnah. On the other hand, if you look in the Ran, the first line in the Ran says that this Ibaitema, Klomar, Hach Braita Nami, da Mafkir Karmo, Rabbi Yossi Atyo. It's coming to answer this previous question, and in the flow of the Gemara, it seems to make the most sense that it's coming to explain how we can reconcile Hamafkirat Sadeh with Hamafkirat Karmo in the Sheet of Rabbi Yossi. That Rabbi Yossi can be the author of both of those Braitot that we had, both the Mafkir Tzadeh and Mafkir at Karmo, and it wouldn't be a problem for his Shita. So now the Ran says it's answering the question of the Stira and the Braitot, at least according to the Shita Rabbi Yossi in the explanation of Reish Lakish, and Rashi says it's coming to explain the difference between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim in the Mishnah as to what their Shitot are vis-a-vis Hefker. The truth is, in the end, that both Rashi will agree to what the Ran says, and the Ran probably will agree to what Rashi says. It's just a question of emphasis, because in the end, however you explain Rabbi Yossi Braita here of Mafkirat Karmo, you can help you explain the Mishnah beforehand. And the same is true vice versa. If Rashi can explain Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, that could help him explain the Braita over here. It's not Muchach, but it seems likely, and so the Rosh states it explicitly, explains that the case is that we could explain both of them. Now the Rosh does take up the Shita like Rashi, and seems to say primarily the Gemara here is answering the Machloket in the Mishnah, and through that, we can say, Hashta the Atit Lahochi. Once we know that that's the Machloket, the Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbona and the Mishnah, that could also explain the Braita over here, Makir et Karmo, that's the Shita of the Rosh, following in these footsteps of Rashi, but then extending it to the Braita. So in the end, it's just a matter of emphasis here between these two Shitot, because in the end, you could explain both issues according to the distinction that we're about to make. The Gemara says, Ibaitema, ha da afkere banpe terrain, ha da afkere banpe talato. Makes a difference whether he did it before two people, the hefker, or whether he did it before three people. So now this is explaining in the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, seemingly, that there's a difference between hefker before two people and hefker before three people. Let us assume now that hefker in front of three people works, and that hefker happens immediately, as opposed to hefker in front of two people, which does not happen immediately, but has to wait until the other party takes possession of it. So then, I will explain the braita about a mafkir at Karmo, that I will explain as a case where he was mafkirit bifnei shlosha. Since he did it in front of three people, then it becomes hefker immediately. And that's why it's patur mana maser, even when he reacquires it the next morning. On the other hand, the case of the Mishnah, where Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and the case of a mafkirit sadeu, according to that sheet of Reish Lakish, that's the case when he did it bape trei, when he did it in front of two people, and therefore it's only hefker once the other party acquires it. Now, as to the reasoning why that is the case, why is it that when you have bape tlato, it works, and by bape trei, it does not work? So now, first of all, you have to understand what does it mean bape trei and bape tlato, in front of two and in front of three. The Ran already poses the question as to, is the party himself included? The person who is relinquishing control, being Mafkir's object, is he included in the number of two? Is he included in the number of three? That will make a difference because that will help explain the different shitot. Let us assume at first that he is included in the number. Doesn't read as well into the language, and the majority of the Rishonim view it as parties independent of the individual himself. But the Ran at least says, let's look at the case of our Mishnah. If you're going to explain our Mishnah in that way, the case of the Mishnah is when there are only two people involved. They're out in the desert, and the two people include the individuals being mafkir. So now, we can readily understand the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. When you're mafkir ba'api trei, which means the person who's being mafkir, plus there's a recipient party there, they're the only two parties here. And now he's mafkir it. Well, if you are mafkir in that type of circumstance, that type of situation, that looks much more like a matana. The only person there that can acquire it is the other party. And that makes it much more like a matana. So therefore, bape trei, which means the mafkir and another party, there Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't work until the other party takes possession of it. On the other hand, bape tlato, which means the mafkir himself plus two others, in that instance, you would say that that's called hefker. Because over here, it's not clear who the recipient party is. Because there's two people there, and any one of them could take possession of it. So already in that case, that's really called hefker, that's called mafkir. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it, and the Ran explains this as well, is to say that the two here means two besides the mafkir, and three means three besides the mafkir. And what is the difference? And that's how the Ran explains over here, is the difference between something that is mifursam versus something that is not mifursam. When you're mafkir in front of three people, that's the equivalent of making it a public issue. It's something that is now going to be known to the public at large. And that means that anybody could come in here and take it because you've now made it a public thing. Three people know about it. That's like telling the whole world about it. Once it's mifursam in that way, then the acquisition of the property is really taking it from hefker. He really did relinquish control because anybody in the world could come and take it. On the other hand, when he's only mafkir in front of two people, that's still a private type of transaction because in the end, he's only been mafkir to one of these two people. One of these two people is not considered to be a public or it's not considered to be mifursam. And that's why over there it's more like a matana than it is like hefker. So that's why the Ran explains, first of all, the question as to whether the two or three include the individual or don't include the individual, as well as what is the difference between the two and the three. The two is because either in the case where it's just the mafkir and the other guy, it means there's only two parties here, so it looks exactly like a matana. Or in the case where it's two besides him, that's still much more like a private transaction. Once you get the three, then it becomes a davar mifursam, av shemilso. It's something that is widely known, publicly known, and therefore that becomes like the whole world knowing about it, and that's why the hefker works immediately, and you don't have to wait for the acquisition of the party who's going to take it off the hands of this individual, because it's not like a matana whatsoever. That's one explanation. That's the way that the Ran explains the difference over here. Tosafot, on the other hand, explains the difference between two and three over here is Damar Yochan Mifnei Mishnaim Ika Lamechash Ramai. The difference between two and three is this issue of Ramaut, is of somebody cheating the system, somebody trying to circumvent the system. When you do it ba'apetrei, when you do it in front of two, then you could think that this person is just trying to set it up so that it's hefker, and then to be poter himself from the trumot and masrot that he's chayavin, and then he's just going to repossess it. On the other hand, once he does it in front of three, it becomes much more of a public issue. And since it's a public issue, and it's not just something where he's trying to do it by himself or quietly or secretly, then it takes away this issue of Ramai, of this issue of trying to circumvent the halakha. So that's why, according to the Tosafot, the difference between two and three is the difference between whether there can be Rama'ut, there can be some sort of trick, circumvention of the halakha that's going on here, versus three, where it already becomes a public issue, and therefore we don't worry about this issue of Ramai or Rama'ut anymore, because it's become such a public issue and it has a call to it. The Rosh explains that the difference between possibly between two and three has to do with this issue of kol, but it's something that we explained in the Rosh earlier. He quotes it, Rabbi Lezer Mimitz, the idea being that we have to have a level playing field. Tevel is something that's well known to people. Since it's well known to people, then we have to have a hefker that's also well known to people. The only way to get a hefker that's well known to people is to have it bifnei shlosha, or to have it out there for 3 days. One of those two will get you it to be a public type of hefker. On the other hand, if you have something that is much quieter, something like a muder hana'ah, which is not such a public issue, then you don't need such a public hefker to deal with it. And therefore you can do with a quieter type of hefker, which is that even in front of two or a smaller hefker, those two are on the equal playing field, and therefore that is the permitted type. And that would be the difference between two and three, is to do with the nature of the type of hefker that you're trying to create over here, and what is the mitigating factor that you're trying to deal with. If it's something that's a public or well-known issue, then the higher level of hefker that you're going to need. On the other hand, if it's a lower level of isur or a lower level of publicity surrounding it, then you also need a lower level type of hefker that is associated with it. The other possibility, same thing that Tosfot says with the Rama'ut, but it's the same thing of the Matanat Beit Choron, that we'd have to worry about people giving those gifts only to, again, circumvent the issue of the Nidarim, and that's why we need to be Bifnei Shlosha, not Bifnei Shnayim, to make it clear, to make it a public issue, and to make sure that people aren't using this as a vehicle to get around some other restriction that has here. Then, the Gemara says over here, Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shim Ben Yehud Tzedak, Kol HaMafkir Bifnei Shlosha, Haviyef, anybody who makes Hefkir before three is Hefkir. But if he does it in front of two people, then it is not considered to be hefker. What does that mean, that it's not considered to be hefker? So the Rosh over here brings two possibilities. He brings the first possibility, lo havi hefker. It's not hefker because he can retract it. He can take it back. That's what it means it's not hefker. Aval miu, hefker havi. It still works to be hefker. It just has that string attached that you can retract the hefker in this case. But that means if another party came and grabbed it, it would be his, because it is real hefker. And he says about that view, that is a very difficult view. The lishna de lo havi hefker. When the Gemara says lo havi hefker, mashma, she'enu hefker klau. They mean it. They mean ain't hefker. That doesn't work at all as hefker. And therefore he believes that the hefker over here, when it says lo havi hefker, it's not hefker whatsoever. Meaning that the two possibilities, if you do it in front of three, it is hefker. If you do it in front of two, it is not hefker, and it's not hefker whatsoever. It doesn't work as hefker, and then until someone else takes possession of it. Now we run into a problem, because if that's the case, then what the Rosh says is this would be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan's Shita. Because Rabbi Yochanan already earlier explained the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi's Shita, where he said that the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi's Shita has nothing to do whether it is hefker before shlosha or not hefker bifnei shtayim, but rather Rabbi Yochanan explained that Rabbi Yossi thinks that hefker is kasava hefker kematana. Ma matana adati mishut nuten reshut mekabel af hefker adati reshut zocha. Rabbi Yochanan actually has a reasoning behind that. And Rabbi Yochanan is also the Bala Memra over here. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rabbi Shimon Yod Tzedak. So how do we reconcile now between these two opinions? According to the way that we're reading it now, the way that the Rosh is reading it, this is Sholel. This throws out everything we've said until now. This discards everything we've said until now. That whole reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan, that it's like Matana, and that you need the other Mekabel, it's all out the window. The answer is, either it's done before three, then it's Hefker. Not done before three, it's not Hefker. And that's the whole reasoning of Rabbi Yossi, according to this. the Rosh says that's problematic, because this is Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan, right after the Mishnah, explained Rabbi Yossi Shita. So how do you reconcile between Rabbi Yochanan? So the Rosh actually says now there might be three different Shitot as to how to explain Rabbi Yossi. And that is that we have the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita which we saw before, that Rabbi Yochanan himself believes that the din over here of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah has to do with whether you need a matana, meaning like you need a person to receive it in order for the hefker to go through. And that'll be the Shita of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, and that's Rabbi Yochanan the Shita to. Then we'll have Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rabbo. Rabbi Yochanan's name is Rebbe here, Rabbi Shimon ben Tzadok, who says that the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi is over here has to do with whether you're mafkir b'apei tzlato or you're mafkir b'apei trei. And then we're going to have a third opinion, which we'll see in a second, which is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's position, which is that efilu b'echad b'dvar Torah, efilu with one person, havi hefker, because he holds, like the Rabbonon, that the altar yatzah mishut hefker, that right away it leaves the possession of hefker. So according to that, we'll have three different explanations about how it works over here, how hefker works. We'll have two shita within Rabbi Yossi, and according to the Rosh, we'll have a third shita, which is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's shita that we're going to see in 1 second. Now, the Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi amar, dvar Torah, mina Torah, afilu be'achad havi hefker. Even with one guy, it's considered hefker. Umata mamru b'shlosha. So then why did they demand three over here? So that one person will take possession of it, and two people will testify to the fact that he took possession of it. So that's why we want Bifnei Shlosha. Bifnei Shlosha is just an imposition midrabanan, and it's not a requirement midoraita. So midoraita, you only require one. Now most of the Rishonim over here say, you can see Rashi says something like this, the Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosafot also says something similar, in Perush Rabbeinu Tam, the Rabbi Yochanan Savala ki Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Shum and Levi ki Rabbonon. Gemara now is setting it up that Rabbi Yossi is parallel with the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is parallel with the Shita of the Rabbonon. So the Rabbonon would say Hefker happens without the requirement of the other party, and Rabbi Yossi ben Levi holds like that, and says that as soon as you have Hefker mina Torah, Hefker happens immediately. Immediately because one person makes it into Hefker, and therefore you can relinquish your control, and you don't need the other party there at all. And that is the Shita of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and that aligns with the position of the Rabbonon. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is explaining Rabbi Yossi's Shita. Why does Rabbi Yossi say that it's not Hefker immediately, and you need another party to acquire it? Because that depends on what type of Hefker you're doing. If you're doing Bifnei Shlosha, you don't need that. But if you do it Bifnei Shnayim, then you need that, because Bifnei Shnayim either doesn't work at all, or it doesn't work completely, depending on which Shita in the Rosh we're looking at. And therefore, what they do is, they say that the Shitot over here align, which is that Rabbi Yossi is being explained by Rabbi Yochanan, and the Rabbonon are explained by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So that's the Shita of Rashi, the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, as well as many of the Rishonim. On the other hand, the Tosafot brings me Shita to read, that that doesn't have to be the case. And he says, over here, I'll pay to read the Matzi Savak Rabbi Yossi, the Lo Polig, Ad Rabbi Yochanan Mide. That over here, he could hold like Rabbi Yossi, because he doesn't argue on Rabbi Yochanan at all. So in that case, what the Tosafot is suggesting over here is that the din here of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan can both be explaining the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. That within the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, these are the two possible explanations over here. That Rabbi Yochanan is explaining Rabbi Yossi in this manner, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is explaining Rabbi Yossi in this manner. One is saying that midoraita, this is the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, and according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Shita of Rabbi Yossi is that's only midrabanan. Midoraita is hefker, but this is an imposition midrabanan that stops the hefker from going through. So that's one way to explain it, and there are others like the Shita Mekubetz that explain just the other way around also, which is that they both could be explaining the Shita of the Rabbonon. That this whole Gemara here doesn't have to be explaining the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, this whole Gemara here can be explaining the Shita of the Rabbonon. And within the position of the Rabbonon, Rabbi Yochanan explains how Hefker works, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi explains how Hefker works. So you can have it work in either direction. The advantage of explaining it that way is that the Gemara over here never aligns the Shitot, which is usually when you have a machloka like Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbonon, and then you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan arguing, and their Shitot parallel the Shitot of Tanaim, the Gemara will say that their Shitot follow, or they'll say halacha ke. The fact that that's not introduced over here seemingly indicates that machlokot are not aligned, and they could fit into either shita. So again, there are, most of the Rishonim think that the shitot are aligned over here, but others still offer the possibility that this doesn't have to be that Rabbi Yochanan is in the shita of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Levi is in the shita of the Rabbanan. Now, if you look in Tosafot and in the Rosh, it's in the last line of the Rosh, and it's also in the last line of Tosafot here on the Daf, they both say that when Rabbi Shimon Levi says that Davar Torah afilu be'echad avi hefker, echad doesn't literally mean echad. It doesn't mean one person, it means afilu be'no le'ben atzmo. Even if you do it without anybody there, it works as hefker. Echad doesn't mean there's another party there. Echad means that any way that you make it hefker, it works. There's no requirement of anybody else to be there. And even Beno the Bein Atzmo, it would work. There are other Rishonim that take it very literally, like the Rambam, who say that the Echad means that you still need one other party there to be there in order to deem it a hefker. If you do it Beno the Bein Atzmo, how can you call that hefker? It can't be hefker when you're mafkir and there's nobody else there, because hefker always implies that someone else could take possession of it. If there's nobody there, who's there to take possession of it? So the Rambam takes the Gemara literally and says, Dvar Torah, afilu be'echad avi hefker, means literally you need another person there. Again, the Rosh, the Tosafot over here, both say that it means afilu be'no, the bein atzmo. Now, the issue is that this presents somewhat of a problem halachically, and Tosafot already raises the issue and tries to deal with that. And that is because the Ma'atam Amru Shlosha tells you that mi'ikar adin midoraito, it's hefker. But midrabanan, you require shlosha, you require three there. And therefore, if you don't have shlosha, according to the Chachamim, according to midrabanan, it would not function as hefker. You would not be successful at creating hefker. Yet, the Gemara, the Mishnayot, Shas, is replete with instances of hefker, but we don't do it b'fnei shlosha. So how do I reconcile between this Gemara, which seems paskin that, at least, l'chatchila, and maybe even b'diavad, the way that the Ran says it over here, that even b'diavad, it's not hefker when you don't do it before three. You could argue that it's only the chatchila you need three, but the Ran and many, like the Rambam, seem to indicate that the three is ma'akev midivrei sofrim, and there's no hefker. So how do I reconcile that with all the other cases in Shas? So the Tosafot, the Shita Toh over here, says, remember that Tosafot says the whole reason you need to do it before Neshal Shas is to prevent Rama'ut, is to prevent this cheating or circumventing. And therefore, Tosafot says that this Takanav Shlosha was specific to Karkaot, was all about land and property, and it was to prevent people trying to circumvent the issue of Masrot, not to try to get out of having to give Chumot and Masrot. And therefore, he says, Mitaltalim are not covered by this din. And since Mitaltalim are not covered by this din, over there, requirement of three would not be applicable whatsoever when it comes to Mitaltalim. So therefore, they say, when we paskin aloha, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi versus Rabbi Yochanan, we paskin aloha, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. But when we paskin, like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that's only with regards to Karkaot, because that's an imposition to Rabbanan to prevent Ramaot. But on the other hand, by Metaltim, other places where that's not an issue, you can be mafkirit even without Bifnei Shlosha. Bifnei Shlosha is not a requirement over there. Others suggest that the Lechatchila, which I said before, which is that Bifnei Shlosha is a Lechatchila. Midrabanan Lechatchila, we'd want a Bifnei Shlosha. But Bidiabad, even the Chachamim agree that it's still hefker when you don't do a Bifnei Shlosha. And that means in cases of a Shatat Chak, like cases of Mudar Hana'ah, or cases of Shabbat, where we need you to relinquish control, those cases, we're going to allow you to do it b'fnei atzmo. We won't require shlosha, because those are b'shat adchak. Others still suggest that when it comes to isurim, or the removal of isurim, then hefker does not require shlosha. We only require shlosha when you're trying to really create or engender a real change in ownership, which would then be poter you from something else, and that's when you need b'fnei shlosha. So that's how the Tosafot reconciles over here. This also leads to a very famous Tosafot that's found in Daf Dalid in the Gemara in Pesachim. The Rabbi Kiva Eger over here notes that you should take a look at that Tosafot over there. But that's a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot in Daf Dalid Amud Bet in Pesachim as to what is bitul. Rashi says that bitul is the definition of the word tashbitu in the Torah. That the word bitul derives from tashbitu. Tosafot argues on that and says that can't be the case, because tashbitu is really tevaru, means to do sreifan, to eliminate the chametz, and therefore Tosafot says that bitul functions mitzad hefker. The way that one is mevatel their chametz is by being mafkirit. That's how they get rid of it. If you're mafkir your chametz, how does this work? How does bitul work then? If we pass like Rabbi Shulman Levi that you need three, When was the last time anybody had to do it in front of three people? They're bittul. You can do your bittul bein ol bein atzmol. So what Tosafot says there in the Gemara in Psachim, as he says, is v'omeri demidoraita bebittul ba'amasage mitam t'machar shebittlo avi hefker. After you do bittul, it's hefker. V'yatzam mirshuto, and it's left his possession. Umutar, and therefore it's mutar. Midgamrinan, because the Gemara says in other places, avalata ro'esh shel achevim shel gvoa. That has to be in your possession for you to be chayav or chametz. So as long as you relinquish control or you get it out of your possession, that's sufficient to take away the iser of chametz. V'hadam rina b'nidarim, he quotes our Gemara over here on Mem Hayam with Aleph. Hefker b'fnei shlosha. What about the fact that you need to do hefker b'fnei shlosha? Midoraita ain't sarich. He says, mina Torah, you don't need that. You don't need three midoraita. So he says, that's right. Bittul works because midoraita, it is hefker. And midoraita, that's all you're trying to do. You're trying to remove the chametz from your possession. So midoraita, it functions. Now, you could argue that that Tosafot argues on our Tosafot over here, because the Tosafot over here says it's only applicable shloshat to karkot, not to metaltalim. The Tosafot over there doesn't say why midoraita ain't tzarich. He doesn't say because, like our Tosafot over here, it says because it only applies to karkot, not to metaltalim. He seems to indicate that at a doraita level, bittul is successful. And since it's successful at a doraita level, we don't worry about the fact that chamim required bifnei shlosha, because there we're talking about bittul mina Torah, and bittul mina Torah is functioning on a Torah level. The Torah level doesn't require shlosha. That's all a rabbinic imposition. That still leaves you with a question. And afterwards, well, if then midrabanan, we're still trying to use bittul, then why don't you need shlosha? And then you have to invoke the answers that we gave for Tosafot. But it's a important machloket in the Gemara in Psachim, but Tosafot raises the issue and connects it to our Gemara over here, as to whether this b'fnei shlosha, how broadly impacting is it? Is it something that encompasses all type of hefker, or is it a more narrowly defined restriction or requirement? And even if you do require it, how required is it? Is it something only l'chatchila, or is it only avad? Okay, with that, we end the perek, hadron alach, ein bein mudar. Now we begin the next perek here, perek shutafin, and as you can see here, we're about to do the Mishnah. And the Mishnah leads to much discussion because the Mishnah is not simple and involves a lot of assumptions, mostly because this Mishnah is discussed in other places in Shas. And other places in Shas, the Gemara gives opinions as to what it thinks the reasons behind this Mishnah are. And now what we're trying to do is reconcile all those different views and versions of the Gemara to try to come up with a solution as to how to explain this Mishnah, which is a shutafin. These are partners. They are partners in a chatzer. They share a common courtyard. In their day, remember, they had numerous houses that opened up into a courtyard, and then the courtyards opened up into a mavoi, into a cul-de-sac of sorts, and then the cul-de-sac exited into the Reshut Rabim. So here you have a chatzer, a courtyard that sits in front of the houses, and you have partners that jointly own the chatzer that is in front of their houses. But they happen to be Shnadru Hana'a Zemizeh. They were really good neighbors, so good that they got upset at each other. And each one of them took a neder hana'ah not to get benefit from the other party. Asurim likanes l'chatzer. They just ruined it for themselves. Neither party can enter into the chatzer anymore, according to the Tanakama. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer, zeh nichnas l'toch shelo, v'zeh nichnas l'toch shelo. Each one of them can go into their part of the chatzer. All right, so we're going to stop here and try to work through what exactly happened in the Mishnah. The first thing you have to deal with is the Gemara in Baba Batra deals with chatzerot. With regards to the din of a chatzer, and the Gemara itself will deal with this in tomorrow's daf, that a chatzer can be different sizes. You can have a chatzer that's large and a chatzer that is small. The Gemara in Baba Batra tells us that if you have four amot for each party inside of the chatzer, four square amot that can belong to each party, then that's what a divisible chatzer. You can now split the chatzer, and each party can actually force the other party to split it. If one of the party wants to split the chatzer, you can say, I don't want to be a partner anymore. I want to take my piece, you take your piece. And they split it evenly. And then the Gemara in Baba Batra deals with how exactly you split it, whether it's based on the number of doors that enter there, so on and so forth. How do you get to that split? But if the chatzer is greater than 8 by 4 amot, then you could split it. If that's the case, we would demand you split it in this case, because then there's no reason for them to continue to be in a partnership. We could force them to divide it. On the other hand, if the chatzer is smaller than that, it's what's called an indivisible chatzer. And so because of that, no party can force the other party to split it, and we would never ask you to split it because the remaining piece that you would get is not really functional. And since it's not functional, we're not going to force you to split it, and that's the type of chatzer that we're speaking about here. It's a case where they can't separate from each other. Because if they could separate from each other, we would demand that they separate from each other. So what we're speaking about here, or the case here, is a case where it's a chatzer that's small enough that they can't divide it. And because of now they're forced to basically live with each other. But now they took a neder hana'ah. And since they took a neder hana'ah from each other, therefore we run into a problem. What is the problem that we run into over here? The problem is that they're going to enter into the chaser, which is called drisat haregel, which is something basically is an easement. It's an ability to walk through the chaser. Now, walking through the chaser, drisat haregel, generally is not considered to be something that people are makpid on. It's not something that people are really careful on. You see, you can look in the Rosh. The Rosh actually says that over here. The Rosh says, the chaser kapte kuliyama drisat haregel. The Rosh says, you know what? When we say people don't care about people traversing their property, when it doesn't impact them, that's only true when we're talking about like fields or areas that aren't in the public. But when you're already talking about a house, for sure over there, we say that people are makbid on drisat haregel. But the Rosh says that even by a chatzer is already deemed to be a private enough area where people do not like other people traversing their chatzer. Va'atio afilu kirabonon. And this is even according to the shita of the Rabbanon, because people are makpid on drisat haregel. Now, what the Rosh is speaking about here is a machlok that we saw in the previous parak, which is a machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim as to whether vitur is asur. When you give up nominal types of hana'ah, is that problematic? So we had a machlok between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbanon said vitur is mutar. Giving up nominal things is not considered to be hana'ah, it's not a violation of the nether. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer says vitur is asur. And so, we saw a number of mishnayot in the previous parak that the Gemara said that stamak Rabbi Eliezer, that those mishnayot are falling in the position of Rabbi Eliezer because over there they were being oster even nominal hana'ah. So what the Rosh says over here is that this is not nominal hana'ah. You know why it's not nominal hana'ah? Because people are makpid on people walking through their chatzer. So now you have two parties over here and each one of them is makpid on the other one not to get hana'ah. And they don't want the other person walking through their property. That means you have a problem of mudar hana'ah. And that's why the Tanakhama says neither party can walk through. That's what the Rosh says. Then he brings the eat the muki lohach Rabbi Eliezer. Some say that our Mishnah only follows the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Damar vitur asur bimudar hana'ah, who says that nominal hana'ah is problematic. And that means that generally people are not makpid on drisat haregel. People don't care. But since over here you are mudar hana'ah from this individual, and even though generally people don't care about drisat haregel, you're still getting a benefit. It's a benefit that is not measurable in the sense of that it's real, real hana'ah, but it's a fact that person is relinquishing his control to allow you to do something. And even though he would do that for everybody else, nevertheless, he's still doing it for you, and that vitur is considered to be asur. So that's the first machloket rishonim we have over here, is whether this Mishnah is following the shita of both the Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer, or only the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. You can see in the Rosh, he gave you both positions. The majority of the rishonim say that this Gemara is following the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. You can see that in the first line in the Ran, the Kasavar Haitana, Vitur Asur B'Mudar Hana'ah. This Tana holds that Vitur Asur B'Hana'ah, he holds like Rabbi Eliezer of the previous Perek. So that's the first thing that we have to address in terms of whether Vitur is a issue or is not an issue over here. Second thing we have to deal with is, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, Zenich Nas Tok Shalom, Zenich Nas Tok Shalom, what exactly is the principle that is being invoked over here? Why is it that Rabbi Eliezer believes that you can go in to your part of the chatzer and the other person can go into his part of the chatzer? So, it's very easy because the Gemara in Baba Kama tells us what this machloket is about. The Gemara in Baba Kama in Daf Nun Aleph tells us that the machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the Tana Kama over here is about Breira, the question of Breira. Breira means that can I make a determination retroactively as to what really belonged to me and what belonged to someone else? And so what the Gemara in Baba Kama is suggesting about the Mishnah over here is this is the machloket. The Tana Kama believes there's no such thing as Breira. Therefore, since we are partners in this chatzer, we can never determine what belongs to me and what belongs to you. And therefore, I can never walk through the chatzer because I don't know if I'm walking on my side or on your side. I don't know if I'm walking on your piece or my piece. And because of that, you can't go through. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says there is Breira. And that means when I walk through the chatzer, I'm walking through my part of the chatzer. When you walk through the chatzer, you're walking through your part of the chatzer. And that's Breira. Retroactively, we're able to determine where your possession is or what you're doing in the chatzer, and therefore it's not a sur, because I'm walking in my space, I'm not walking in your space. What we're saying is that when I'm walking in there, it's my space. When you're walking in, it's there, your space. And that's exactly the Breira. That's the way the partnership works. When I'm utilizing it, it's mine. When you're utilizing it, it's yours. Now, Tosafot says something very interesting over here. Tosafot says that's only true if you don't use the whole chatzer. Along the lines of your question, which is that, wait a minute, if you're using it and he's using it, what's going on? You can only use, according to the Tosafot, you can only utilize up to 50% of the chatzer. He says over here, Mi uvadaya asur le lishtoach peirot b'chol chatzer. For sure you can't spread your fruits across the whole chatzer, aval aleich b'kulo mutar, damar b'chol duchta mehaleich hainu chelko. Because when you're walking, wherever you're walking is less than 50% of the chatzer, and therefore wherever you walk, that's yours at that moment. On the other hand, if you take up the whole chatzer by putting all your parrot across the whole chatzer, it's clear now you're impinging on the other person's rights or the other person's ownership in the chatzer, and that would be problematic. So that's the shita of the Tosafot over here, that we're talking about the ability through Breira to determine which is your piece and which is not your piece. All right, so now that really introduces a huge problem, because the Gemara in a second is going to say, Halacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we know that in general, Tamov nimoko imo, and therefore the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov when he's founded a Mishnah. That means that we're about to paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that Breira works. And not only does Breira work, but Breira works de'oraita, because we're talking about nidarim over here, the Isu Neder is a din de'oraita. That means that Breira works even de'oraita. The problem with that is Gemara in Beitza quotes the Sheet of Rabbi Hoshaya, which we paskin like, which is that Breira works midrabanan, but it doesn't work midoraita. Breira works in halachot that are derabanan, does not work in halachot that are deoraita. So now all the Rishonim are in a bind, because we're paskening here like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and since we're paskening like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we're saying Breira works, and Breira works even on deoraita level. Yet the Gemara in Beitza says to us in Rabbi Hoshaya that when it comes to Breira, Breira only works in dinei derabanan, doesn't work in dinei deoraita. How do we reconcile these two piskei halachot? So if you look, it's actually on Mem Vav Amud Bet. There's a Tosafot. The second Tosafot in Mem Vav Amud Bet describes the Shito, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Ri, as they have to reconcile that. So we'll start with that. Those are the first two Shito to look at this. It says, V'kasho, the Gemara, he brings a question. B'perek Batra, the Beitza, Paskinik Rabbo Shaya. D'amar, B'doraita, Ein Breira, B'dorabanan Yesh Breira. V'hacha Doraita, M'faresh Rabbeinu Tam. D'havda, Paskinik Rabbo Lezer Ben Yaakov, Lav Mitameh. We don't paskin like Rabbi Elazar Yaakov according to his reason. We paskin that he's right vis-a-vis the halacha, but not because of his reasoning. The Yesh Breira, Ela Mishum de Vitor Mutar B'Mudar Hana'ah. But rather, because we paskin that Vitor is Mutar B'Mudar Hana'ah. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says in the end is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is right, but not because of the reason of the Gemara in Baba Kama. The Gemara in Baba Kama says it's because of Breira, and that's why we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So Rabbeinu Tam says we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but not because Breira works. Because rather, Vitor b'mudar hana'ah is mutar. We pass on like the Rabbanan versus Rabbi Eliezer. So now, that's the way Rabbeinu Tam reconciles between these two problematic or seemingly contradictory piskei halacha. On the other hand, the Ri comes along and says, how could you say that? First of all, we just had a perek replete with stam mishnayot that paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, that Vitor is asur b'hana'ah. That Vitor is asur. How could you come along and say, well, we don't paskin like that. Vitor is mutar. That's number one problem with his shita. And the second problem with his shita is, it seems like Gemara in Baba Kama says the reason behind Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is Breira. So how are you just discarding that Gemara? So therefore, the Ri wants to come up with a different reason. There are those who suggest that when we say Vitor Zasar Vana, that's only Durabonon. And therefore, if you say it's Durabonon, then you're actually within the perspective of Rabbi Hoshaya, because now you're implying Breira in a case where Breira is only affecting a Din Durabonon of Vitor is Asur B'Hana'ah Midrabanan. So that is a way to solve the problem, but most people believe that Vitor is Asur Midoraita, and therefore you have to come up with a different answer, and that's what the Ri says. The Ri says, Eino Hanami Vitor is Asur Midoraita, and I'll explain to you what the answer is here. V'Ri Perish, T'Paskin and Shapir, Mitaima D'Yesh Breira. U'B'Beitza, Lo Pasik Rabbi Hoshaya, U'B'Mai Damar, B'Durabanan Yesh Breira. He says, you got it wrong. When the Gemara Paskins like Rabbi Hoshaya, that there is Breira Midrabanan and no Breira Deoraita. When the Gemara says Halacha is like Rabbi Hoshaya, that's that Breira, there is Breira Midrabanan. But that doesn't mean that we paskin like him on the Deoraita level. On the Deoraita level, we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And that means we paskin that Breira works Deoraita, based on our Gemara over here. And we paskin that Breira works Midrabanan, based on Rabbi Hoshaya over there. And that's how the Ri reconciles between these two disparate opinions. Now, the problem with the Ri Shita is that throughout Shas, that doesn't seem to be the case. Throughout Shas, it seems to be that we paskin Breira works in Drabonin issues, and Breira does not work on Doraita levels, and it's really premised on that statement of Rabbi Hoshaya. And so what the Ri says over here, that we're only taking a portion of Rabbi Hoshaya, does not seem to be true. And therefore, we have another attempt to reconcile this issue, and that's the Shita of the Ramban. The Shita of the Ramban, it's quoted here in the Ran as well. The Shita of the Ramban is, Breira over here is different than Breira anywhere else in Shas. This is not the classic case of Breira. A classic case of Breira is that we start out with a problem that we don't know which belongs to which item belongs to whom. That's the question of the Breira. Eventually, down the road, we will determine or we will figure out who owns this piece, who owns this piece, who does this belong to, who does that belong to, where does this belong, where does that belong. So there'll be a clarification at a later time to the issue that we don't have resolution to today. That's a classic case of Breira. Our case over here is not like that. You know why? Because it'll never be resolved. We are partners in this chatzer, and the chatzer's partnership will never determine which side belongs to me and which side belongs to you. It's an indivisible property. And since it's an indivisible property, this Breira over here is a Breira that will never get clarified and never have clarification. Who? The name of the Bere Milton Mafreya. We can never say that this is Breira that will be clarified Mafreya. And that's how he resolves between this Breira and Breira throughout Shas. Throughout Shas, we're talking about Breira where there's going to be a clarification now retroactively wanting to institute something. This is a permanent problem of Breira. This is a permanent problem where we'll never resolve the issue. And therefore, he says the din will be different over here. And since they are partners here, that's the nature of their partnership. The nature of the partnership is it will never be resolved. And it will work out that each person gets a portion of his property. When he uses it, he'll get his piece. That's the way the Ramban tries to resolve this and say that what we're talking about here is not Breira. It's called Breira, but it's not Breira. And that's what the Ramban takes him to task on. He says, the Gemara in Baba Kama calls this Breira. And you're telling me it's not Breira? If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's a duck. So if it's Breira, it's Breira. I mean, how could you call it not Breira? And therefore the Ramban says he doesn't think the Ramban's right in making such a distinction because Breira, if the Gemara in Baba Kama calls it Breira, it means the same Breira like it says in the Gemara in Beitzah, the same way it says in the Gemara in Gittin. Breira is Breira. And how do you make that distinction? And therefore, the Ran comes up with a different solution to the problem, which is very interesting because it might have to do with the Chakira in partnerships in general. When two people are partners in any object, how do you view their partnership? Is their partnership based on the fact that each partner owns 100% of the partnership, and I own 50% of that 100% ownership? Or is a partnership that the 100% is divided up and each of us own 50% of the partnership? How do I view the partnership? That's the question. Is the partnership something that we can divide and I own 50% of it, you own 50% of it? Or is the partnership an entity? It's a singular entity. That's 100%. And I own 100% of my portion of the partnership and you 100% of your part of the partnership. But it's not that we split this 50-50. But rather that we both own the entirety of the partnership, but that's only 50% of that entirety. So that will make that's a chakira in partnerships, and the Ran seems to be going along those lines here. And he explains that the Breira here is different, not because of what the Ramban says, it's not Breira, but it is Breira. But it's a Breira that has a different impact. And what the Ran says is, Breira manifests itself in different ways. There's certain things where when you start at the beginning of the process, something is a safek. It's unknown. But at that time, it's completely unknown. And then later on, we'll get clarification about that safek. So the way that he describes it is, for instance, by Eruv or other things like this. So when you have a decision to be made or something that we have questions about and you have a safek. So now when you have a safek, we're trying to determine what the answer to that safek is. After the fact, we find out information. But in that case, when you come to the information, one piece of information says this is the case, and one of it says it's not. So for instance, in the case of Eruv, person's not sure where the Chacham's gonna come. So he puts an Eruv in the Mizrach, and he puts an Eruv in the Ma'arav. So since he puts an Eruv in both locations, and now he's waiting to see where the Chacham comes. In that case, when you get clarification later on, when you put the Eruv down in the east, and you put the Eruv down in the west, there's a possibility that will be an Eruv. It's a possibility it'll be nothing. It'll be a zero. So your safek in the beginning is a safek that deals with the, maybe I'll call it the integrity or the essence of the item. The essence of the item is bis safek. And that will only be determined later whether the essence of this item is really going to be something or not be something. That's your classic case of Breira. And that's where we say that ain't Breira. When it comes to Dinim Doraita, there's no Breira. On the other hand, the nature of the safek over here is very different, which is that when they bought the chatzer together, the safek in which they bought it, meaning that we were going to be joint owners of the chatzer, from day one, that is the essence of the chatzer, that's the essence of the partnership. Our partnership is that we will jointly own this property. Now, what's the brera here? The brera is, when am I going to use it, and when are you going to use it? When I use it, the chatzer will be 100% mine. When you use it, the chatzer will be 100% yours. So our only question is, when you get to use it, when I get to use it. But as far as the chatzer itself, all along, I own my part of the chatzer, you own your chatzer, or in the sense, the way that the Ran's saying it is, I own 100% of the chatzer, you own 100% of the chatzer. The only thing we need to clarify is, when does my 100% apply, and when does your 100% apply? Now, that will differ from what we saw the Tosfot before. Tosfot before says you can't use the whole chatzer, because then you would be impinging on the rights of the individual. The way the Ran is explaining now, if you use the whole chatzer, that's totally fine. Because the only question, the only item that is at question at hand is, now, when is my turn to use the 100%? And when is it your turn to use the 100%? And so now, what it is that I own 100% of this chatzer, and you also own 100% of this chatzer. The brera is just determining, when is it my 100% applicable, and when is your 100% applicable? Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, Zenichnas l'toch shelo, v'zenichnas l'toch shelo. When I go into the chatzer, I'm using my 100% of the chatzer. Ah, now I know what time, or when it's true that I am using or utilizing my 100% of the chatzer, because now I'm there. And that's what makes the determination. So the brera there is not about the essence of the item or the essence of your ownership. Your ownership's 100% all the time. The question is just, when is that going to be invoked? When is your 100% ownership going to be invoked? It's not a question as to the status of the object or the essence of the object. And therefore, the Ran says there's a difference, therefore, in the type of brera that we're talking about. The brera in Beitza, the brera typically in Shas, is a question about the essence of the item, whether it is or isn't. And therefore, brera over there, we're going to say doesn't work. Over here, brera will work because the decision point afterwards is a minor issue. It's like, oh, the miut. It's a small part of the question, which is simply, when is my 100% of ownership exercised? But my 100% of ownership always exists. And therefore, it's a different type of brera. The Chachamim argue. Tanakama here argues, and this is what goes back to the Chakira I said in partnerships. The Chachamim say you only own 50% of the Chatzer. You own 50% of the Chatzer, and you have a right of easement on the other 50%. You have owned 50%, and you have a right to use or walk on the other 50% of the chatzer. So, I own 50%, I have a right of easement. He calls that a shibud. We know that konamot can override a shibud. So now that's the problem, according to the Tanakama. What happens here is, when you take this neder, as far as your side of the property, that's not a problem. You can continue to use. The problem is that your easement now is wiped out by the fact that that other 50% that you had an easement to walk on and to do whatever you wanted on, that easement's now gone because the Neder Hana wipes it out. Because a Konam is unable to undermine a Shibud. By doing that, now we're stuck. Because you only own 50%, the other guy owns 50%, there's no Brera, there's no way for you to utilize this Chatzer anymore. And so basically what the Chachamim are saying is, that when you have a partnership means I own 50% of this property, and you own 50% of the property. Then we have easements on the other 50% in order to utilize it. On the other hand, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov believes that partnership means I own 100%, and you own 100%. Now it's a question of when my 100% applies and your 100% applies. The difference will be in this halacha here. When I take a neder anah, can I then continue to exercise my rights? According to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, of course. Because my 100% I always owned. You can't get me out. You can't be oser davar sheni shali. This is my item. You can't take a neder to wipe out something that belongs to me. I own 100%, and I can go into my 100% anytime I so choose. And then for the Chachamim, how can it be that you take a neder and you wipe out someone else's property? That's not the case. According to the Chachamim, you only own 50%. The neder is affecting the shibud on the other 50%. Your easement to go on the other 50%, that's what's getting wiped out. And that he has a right to do, or that has the ability to do it. The Ran says that that's so powerful that a konam can undo a shibud, that a renter or a leaseholder in a property, what is his rights in the property? His rights in the property are a shibud, or in essence, an easement to utilize the property while they're renting it. And therefore, he says if someone is osir bana through a konam, he can actually undermine the schirut. Even if the socher paid for it up front, even if the socher was already in the property, if someone takes a neder, a konam, he can undo the schirut or the right of the socher to be inside of that property. And that's how the Ran explains this opinion over here and why this is different. Why we can pass like Rabbi Hoshaya and pass like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, and they will not be contradictory psiskei halacha. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Ushnehem asurim lamid rechaim. Vitanur ulegadel tarnagolim. Both of them are not allowed to put up a mill or an oven or to put chickens into the chatzer. Now, you could be for a number of reasons here. The Ran, the way that he explains this, is the problem of vitor. That's the problem of vitor because over here, the Gemara in Baba Batra says that people are allowed to stop their neighbor from doing this in the courtyard. Most people will not. Most people will not stop people, and people aren't makpid on these types of things, but they have a right of refusal to stop you to do this. Since they have a right of refusal and they're waiving that right of refusal, that's vitor. And we just said vitor is asur. Shnehem asurim. They are both asur in this case because of the fact that vitor is asur over here. Now, Tosafot, on the other hand, says that the reason the problem here is, this is Tosafot the Shittato, he says, Dahani, Yocholim Nechodze Azeh, below Neder. That's what we said was the Shittah of the Ran. Then he brings a second interpretation, Yesh Mefarshim, Shemid Rechaim Baim Rov Am, Lisham, Umemalei, Chelko Vechelech Havero, Vechen Legadel Tarnagolim, Mefarshim B'chol HaChatzer. This is Tosafot the Shittato, that if you use the whole Chatzer, you're in violation of the Neder. So the problem is here, if you do something that's going to bring a lot of people in there, by definition, you're not only going to use your half of the chatzer, you can use the other half of the chatzer, and that's going to cause you a problem here. And so this is Tosfot the Shittato. If you use the whole chatzer, then you're definitely in violation of the neder. According to Ran, that's not an issue, because you have entitlement to use the whole 100%, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, when you're there. So there, either the problem here is Vitor is Asur, or according to Tosfot, the problem is that you're using the whole chatzer. And that's what the issue is over here. Okay, and the Mishnah continues and says, according to Ran, this part of the Mishnah is completely unnecessary because, of course, we had before the case where we have two people mudar hana from each other, so certainly when one of them is mudar from the other one, the same din will apply to that one individual who is mudar hana. And therefore, you can't go into the chatzer. I'm going to my space. So let's just altering what we saw in the first lines of the Mishnah to one person instead of both parties. The chiddush here is v'kofim et noder limkor et chelko. We force the person who took the neder to sell his portion. Now, what that means, according to most of the Mishnah, this means that if the person took the neder about himself and he restricted himself in getting anah from his neighbor, then we're going to force him to sell it to get out of this problem. We're going to say, go sell your half of the chatzer and get rid of this problem so that it doesn't continue to be an issue. On the other hand, if it was the other neighbor that took, made him asur banah in the neighbor's property, then we can't force him to sell because it's not his fault. It's the neighbor's fault. Although there are Rishonim who say if you're the Madir, whoever took the nether to create the problem of Hana, he's the one that we would force to sell. So whether it's the Madir on himself or it's the Madir on his neighbor, the one who took the nether, they're going to be the one that we force to deal with this Isur Hana. Now this line in the Mishnah, according to most of the Rishonim, Kofim et Anoder, the Mekoret, Chalko, is according to the Shita of the Chachamim. Because according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we have no problem. You can go in, the other guy can go in. So there's no issue here whatsoever. On the other hand, according to the Chachamim, where you can't enter the Chatzer, where one person is now a sewer, we don't like that, because that's going to lead to what we call inequality in the Chatzer. And therefore the other guy's going to say, oh look, he's going into the Chatzer, and I can't go into the Chatzer. Well, if he can go in, I can go in. And then they're going to come to, he's going to come to violate the Neder. That's why we compel you to sell it in order to avoid that problem. But that is only within the Shita of the Chachamim. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, none of this gets over the ground. And as Tosafot says over here, Rabbi Elazar, came to Shnei Mutarim, Lama Kofin. Since they're both Mutar to enter there, why would you force one of the parties to sell it in this case? On the other hand, Daran says over here that that's not necessarily true. He says that, Aval Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Marech Pele Bidrisa the Regel, Yehu Nami Shari. By Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, this shouldn't be an issue because both of them are entitled to walk through. So he's not going to get jealous of his friend. He can walk in just like his friend can walk in. But then Tosafot says, maybe not, because and if he's jealous of his friend about putting in the mill there, then he could just tell him, I don't want you to put your mill in there. And we said before that you have a right to stop him. So you can make the whole situation equal here, even though you're mudar hana'ah. And therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar, there doesn't seem to be any reason why you would force the guy to sell. But then the Ran says, maybe, ika lemeimar, the came into shutafim, ki haigav lo kapti. Since people normally are not makpid on these types of items, zilabe milte la kuve. It would be beneath his dignity to be oser his friend in utilizing the chatzer in that way. So here this guy took a neder hana not to get hana from his friend. So now he can't put in his rechaim, and he can't put in his tanur, and he can't put in his tarnagolim. So what could he do to make it even so he won't get jealous of his friend? He'll tell his friend, you know what, I'm makpid. I don't want you putting in your rechaim. I don't want you putting in your tanur. But that's really beneath his dignity. People normally aren't makpid on that. If he does that, it makes him into a bad guy. And if it makes him into a bad guy, he's not going to even out the playing field that way. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we're going to force him to sell to stop this problem or to erase the issue of this seeming inequality that's going to cause him to violate the neder. The Mishnah continues, Ayachad men ha-shuk mudar b'achad mehem hana'a. If there's a party in the shuk who is restricting getting hana'a from one of the two owners of this chatzer, of this joint chatzer, Lo yikaneis the chatzer. He may not enter the chatzer. That's the shita of the Tanakhama. Belezer ben Yaakov omer yochol lomar lo l'tok shel chavercha ani nichnas. I'm going into your friend's part of it. I'm not going to your part. I'm going into the part that doesn't belong to you. Ani nichnas tok shelcha. I'm not going to your part. There is a machloket vishonim that the Ran brings down between the Rashbo and the Ra'a, where the Ran says over here that the Rashba says dafka shu nichnas l'tzorach hashutaf. That's only when he goes in for the benefit of the party that he's mutar to get anah from. In that case, you can make the claim that he's going to that part of the chatzer, not into the part of the shutaf that he's asur and anah with. On the other hand, if he walks in willy-nilly, or he just walks in there without any reason, then he would be restricted from going in there, because then he can't make a claim that I'm going in for your friend and not for you. Because how does he know that? He wasn't invited in. He's not going in for the purpose of the friend. On the other hand, avarazal kadab b'cholin yan shari. That's mutar for the guy to go in no matter what, because since he has no Easter right now with the other party, he can always claim he's in the other party's space. The Ran rejects that explanation, velo nearly dvarav. He says that what the Ra'ah says doesn't make so much sense to me, and I disagree with what the Ra'ah is saying, and I agree with what the Rashba is saying over here. Hamudar chana mechaviro, a person who is restricting getting in front of from his friend, ve'yishlo merchatz ubeit abad, muskarim ba'ir. And he owns a bathhouse or a olive press in the city, but he's rented them out to other people. So other people are actually now the leaseholders on these properties. If he still has a connection to the property, basically if he's profit sharing, not only did he rent it out and then he's totally out of the picture, but he rented it out, but he's also a profit sharing person in the bathhouse or in the press, then this individual, Asur, he's getting hana from that party because that party still has ownership in here through his profit sharing. Ain lo behem tfisat yad. On the other hand, if he has no residual ownership in this, whether through profit sharing or any other mechanism, then it's mutar because it's as if the leaseholder now becomes the real baalim over the property, and therefore you're not getting hana'ah from this individual whatsoever. Now the Rashba says over here, when it comes to this haskara, the chiyamrinu mishen lo behem tfisat yad mutar, when we say that if the original owner has no residual ownership over here when he's renting it out, that it's mutar, dafka shu muskarim kvar. That's only if they were rented before he took the nether. But if he rented them out after the nether was taken, then that would not be the case. Because when the nether was taken, it was under the full ownership of the individual. And therefore it was included in the nether. And then when he rents it out afterwards, that does not change the fact that this chepta is asur because of the nether, just because he rented it out. So therefore it has to be that it was rented out prior to the nether in order to grant you this dispensation in order to be able to enter it. Haomer lechaveiro, konam leveitcha shani nichnas, visadecha shani lokeach. Takes nether that I will not get any benefit from your house, or I will not purchase your field. Mate, oshim micharo lacher, if this guy dies, and then his yorshim take it over, or he sells it to a third party, mutar, then he is permitted to buy that field, or he's permitted to enter that house now, because he used the possessive form. He said beitcha and sadcha. Well, if it's no longer beitcha or no longer sadcha, he's no longer subject to the nether that he took. On the other hand, if he says konam bayit ze shani nichnas sade zo shani lokeach, if he makes the issur that this house I will not enter or this field I will not buy, he does not do it in the possessive form. Meit o shemecharo lacher sori. Then if the owner dies and his yorshim take it over, or it was sold to a third party, can't use it because he made the chetza asur. He didn't connect it to the gabra at all. He said this chetza of the house is asur and it will remain asur. It will survive the ownership because he focused on the house, not on the owner. And same thing with the sadeh. On the other hand, if he focuses on the house, his ownership or the field's ownership, where he says sadcha beitcha over there, then the ownership matters as well. So actually, there actually is a kula and a chumra with each one of these types of nether. If you take the nether as beitcha and sadcha, that means that if the individual passes away or sells it to a third party, then you'll be able to enter the house, you'll be able to buy the field, because it's no longer beitcha sadcha. On the other hand, the chumra in that is, if the house falls down, and then he rebuilds the house, then he will not be able to get anah from it, because it's still beitcha. It's the same house, it's still his house. And since it's still his house that he rebuilt, and even though it's a new house, but it's his house, you'll still be asur b'anah. On the other hand, when you say bayit zeh, or sadozo, in that case, it's the chumra that even if the guy passes away or sells it to a third party, it'll still be asur. But the cool is if the house falls down and then he rebuilds it, that's no longer bayit zeh. It's not this house because the chepza is gone. This is a new chepza over there. And therefore he'd be mutar to go into the house. So each language or version of language has a kula or chumra associated with it. that comes from whether you focus on the chefza or you're focused on the gavra's relationship with the chefza. That's what is asur to you. The Ran quotes from the Yushalmi that says that if he formulates it as Beit Chazeh, that he uses both the Shonot, then he actually gets the Kulot of both sides. Because he made it in the possessive form, plus he said Zeh, then you'll get both Kulot, which is number one, if he dies or if he sells it to a third party, then you will be permitted to go into the house. And the same thing, if it falls down and is rebuilt, you'll also be going in the house because that has to do with the Zeh. So if you use Beit Chazeh, then both kulot apply to you because you've used, invoked both languages. One that focuses on the gavra, one focuses on the chefza, and the jointly together, you get the kulot of both of those languages. Ran says it's not only if he sold it, but even if he gave it as a matana, in that case, to another party, it would work to free the isur over here. Elo lahochin akat machran, the reason that the Mishnah mentions machran and not matana, l'shmina de davka machran lacher. Aval, amar beitcha shani nechnas umecharo lo asur. But on the other hand, if he sells the house to you, to the person who's asur b'ana'ah, then it won't work. That will not free it from being beitcha into clearing the isur hana'ah. It has to go to a third party in order to clear the isur hana'ah and allow you then access to it. But if he sells it directly to you, then that will not work, clear the isur hana'ah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on Memvav Amud Aleph.